Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason out of the office this afternoon, so no update of the commodity markets for this Monday. However, a really good program for you. Know it makes a big difference who has the ear of the president. That position belongs to several people. One of them is the Secretary of Agriculture, Sonny Perdue. The other one, who sits right in the White House and is there every day in the morning at meetings, is Ray Starling. He's a special assistant to the president, and we caught up with him during NAFB's Washington Watch a week and a half ago. He spoke to us, and I thought you'd kind of like to hear what he had to say. So for this half hour, we'll hear from Ray Starling, a North Carolina boy, an FFAer, a farm kid that's made it to Washington, D.C., and is the special assistant to President Donald Trump.
Obviously an honor for me as a farm kid from North Carolina to be in this role and to serve the president as his special assistant for agriculture, agricultural trade, and food assistance. I would note that this position was not always filled by the last administration and certainly was not filled in a number of administrations this early in the administration coming to life. And giving me the topic for today's speech, I was told to talk about, you know, what are we going to be doing in the ag sector and in the ag space? What is our administration policy? What are our priorities? And so I'll try to touch on that. Let me begin by saying, and everyone in this room already knows it, we have work to do. I will talk about the priorities as I see them shaping up, and they really fit into about four major categories, I hope by now. That they are familiar to you, because I suspect they are the same things that other folks have talked to you about today. Number one, and this is the talk of the town right now, promoting agricultural trade. I mentioned last week in a briefing that obviously we grow more food than we consume here in the United States. Our farmers' impressive ability to continue to increase their productivity and their output at a rate much higher than our domestic food and fiber consumption means that our access to foreign markets is paramount, or else we will obviously enter longer periods of decreasing or declining revenue and falling prices.
So trade is the first of four topic areas that Ray Starling took up with the members of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting almost 2 weeks ago now in Washington, D.C. We'll hear more from him when we come back here on Illinois Public Media's Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to helping farm families succeed by offering financial products and services geared specifically to agriculture and rural communities, and developing partnership-based relationships with its member owners.
Let me take a moment now to thank you for listening to our ag programming. Thank you. I mean it. Really. Thank you for listening to the programming. And just as a reminder, here's what you hear each and every business day. We start at 8:55 a.m. with the opening market report, including Aaron Curtis, Pete Manhart, Bill Gentry, Ellen Dearden, and Bill Mayer. And then an update at 10:58 a.m. with five other voices, Joe Vaklovic, Greg Ginder, Merrill Crowley, Chip Nellinger, and Steve Georgie, followed up at 12:58 each and every business day with Sue Martin, and then, of course, the closing market report, including our analysts Kurt Kimmel, Wayne Nelson, Jackie Vakes, Dan Zwicker, and Mike Zuzalem. And we wrap up each week by recording Commodity Week on Thursday evening. You can hear it at willag.org that night, or on Friday afternoon at 2:36. Oh, and don't forget that we also have a whole series of regularly scheduled analysts during the closing market report for weather. Those include meteorologist on Monday, Mark Russo, Tuesday, Don Day, Wednesday, Drew Lerner, Thursday, Mike Tenora, and on Friday afternoon, both Jim Angel and Eric Snodgrass. WillAg.org. We think it's one of the most comprehensive places that you can find information about markets and weather and agricultural news. Oh, and thank you. Thank you so much for listening. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this 15th day of May. It's a Monday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason out of the office, so no update of the commodity markets. However, we'll continue to hear from Ray Starling now. He's a special assistant to Donald Trump based in the White House and making sure that each and every day agriculture plays a role in the Trump administration. He told us early on that trade was one of four pillars of the administration.
The president is committed to renegotiating or negotiating agreements that secure open and equitable access to foreign markets, that insist upon the use of sound science when scientific judgments are implicated, to eliminate tariffs or subsidy regimes that unfairly disadvantage American products, and that hold our trading partners accountable when they invoke unfair or unjustified market practices. To use the president's terminology, agriculture already helps us win in the race to trade more, and we need to make sure agriculture continues to win. We're committed to that. Number two, and apparently the secretary mentioned this morning, providing farmers with access to a reliable, affordable workforce. For decades, foreign-born labor has been the principal source of the majority of the workforce in hand harvest and labor-intensive agriculture. This is not a problem that is new. To remain viable, the ag industry needs both short-term and long-term solutions to its labor challenges, again, most of which are not new. Obviously, there is a need to stabilize the current workforce and ultimately deliver a market-based, flexible visa program which maintains the following pillars. One of those is avoiding the displacement of American workers, ensuring that we have program integrity and compliance, providing for worker mobility, and that guarantees certainty, stability, and predictability in its administration. So certainly on that list of priorities, access to agricultural labor is at the top of the list. Thirdly, halting the regulatory onslaught. You've already seen the president make several moves in this regard. He's issued some general executive orders that address the need to reevaluate where we are in the regulatory and administrative state. And then just last week, to the extent that you were aware of the president's farmer roundtable and the executive order he signed that day, he asked Secretary Perdue, within the first 180 days of his administration over at USDA, he is required to direct an interagency review of regulations impacting agriculture. We've talked about this before, the idea that certainly USDA has direct impact on farmers, but at the federal level, it's a number of federal agencies that impact our productivity and our profitability. Certainly, we want to conduct this review with an eye toward protecting our natural resources and being fair to the environment. But at the same time, we need to ask ourselves some hard questions, namely, what can we do to meet that goal while also lessening the regulatory burden on the farmer? That's exactly what the executive order asked the secretary to lead, a process which I know he is excited to get started. The last point, or the last pillar, of the ag agenda for the president, improving infrastructure in rural America. I think you're hearing a lot of conversation about infrastructure. I saw an article the other day with the headline, "It's All Infrastructure." And so there's certainly a lot of folks that are trying to get to the table to make the case that their ask fits under the infrastructure umbrella. There's still a lot of optimism that there'll be folks on the left and folks on the right that want to buy into this process and want to support infrastructure. And so ag needs to be a part of that conversation. Our rural communities need to be at the table when we're talking about what can we do to make you more productive, what can we do to make these communities remain economically viable. A couple of things that come to mind and certainly are an active part of the conversation now. I don't think from over in North Carolina as much about waterways as I'm now learning to think about. But if you look at that heartland of America and you look at the grain that's grown there and the fact that if we want to get it out to our trading partners, we have to bring it down a river. That's the most economically efficient way to do that. Are we doing that at a rate that is productive? Do we have the resources and the mechanism in place to make that process as efficient as possible? I see someone nodding their head no. There are certainly improvements that we need to make there, and the grain sector in particular has made us aware of those, so those things are certainly in play. Think about our friends in California, where they've got this unique situation this year, where they have more water than they know what to do with, at least in some parts of the state. What pains them more than knowing that that water won't be there eventually is knowing that if they had the infrastructure in place to store that water, they would be able to use it over the course of the growing season and they could take advantage of the natural resource that came down this spring. So those ideas, I think, are also on the table. But when we think about the ag infrastructure, I also think about our land-grant university system. I think about the extension system. I think about our research collaboratives. All of those things are unmatched around the world. And I think if we want to remain strong and remain the leader in this sector around the world, we have to make sure that we give due attention to those as well. The president recognizes the risks facing rural America, and we know we have to face them head on. So looking forward to working on each of those priorities. Again, a number of conversations going on in those areas already. I think another thing that we want to do, which isn't really a vertical goal, but more horizontal across the ag sector generally, we want to brag on agriculture more. I hope that you're going to hear more about the importance of ag. You're going to hear more about its criticality to local and rural communities in this administration than perhaps you have in the past. Just last week, an argument that we in the ag sector have made year after year after year is that our food security, our domestic food security, is very important to our national security. These are almost the exact words that the president used when he signed this executive order last week. Having him recognize that, having him say that, having him articulate that, I think that's important. And so I think bragging about ag's importance and being able to state that, that is certainly a victory and something that we are going to continue to do. I would also add, and this is your tidbit, I have said this in private settings before, but we've now done the research to make sure it's exactly right. This is a community that the president knows generally supported him in his reelection effort. So it's a politically important group to the president. So obviously economically significant, but also politically important. Of the 30 states that the president won in 2016, ag and agribusiness are a number one, two, or three industry in 26 of those states. I'll say that again. Of the 30 states that the president won in the fall of 2016, agriculture and agribusiness are the number one, two, or three industry in 26 of those states. It's number one in 14, it's number two in six, and well, I may have my math wrong. It's number one in 14, it's number two in eight, and it's number three in four, if that's how many there are left to get us to 26. We've actually done the research to make sure that was right. So with that said, it's a politically important group, and I think the president has put together a great ag team. We are very fortunate to have Secretary Perdue in the place that he's in. That did not happen any moment too soon. Also, as Secretary Perdue is putting his team together, it's important to watch that and see the decisions he makes there, and I know he is rounding out and making decisions about that as we speak. But even the folks that have been there prior to the Secretary getting there, Mr. Clovis, Brian Klippenstein, Heidi Green, Chris Young, these are names that are familiar to the ag sector and all who have a passion about our sector and our industry, and that's half the battle. The United States Trade Representative, if you were to go back and read Mr. Lighthizer's responses to the QFERS that the Finance Committee gave him, the questions for the record that the Finance Committee gave him after his hearing, a number of senators asked him specifically agriculture-related questions. Time after time after time in that document, he says exactly what I think the ag community would have wanted him to say in responding to those questions. So he's a valuable member of our team, and we're excited about hopefully very soon getting him into place.
Quick note here, Robert Lighthizer was confirmed by the U.S. Senate last week. We're listening to Ray Starling. He's a special assistant on agriculture to President Donald Trump. His office is in the White House.
My boss, Gary Cohn, the director of the National Economic Council, a former commodity trader, someone who understands the ag commodity market, someone who has interfaced with the House Ag Committee and the Senate Ag Committee in the past. He's got some relationships in place. It is very important to have advocates, I think, inside the White House for our sector. And Gary has been very supportive in my work and in making sure that we have the attention that we need and the ability to get to the president when we need to. In fact, today I wore out that time a little bit. We have a staff meeting every morning. And all of the folks on Gary's team go around the room and do a quick update. And so this morning I had finished my time, and somebody else said, was talking, and I don't know how this came up exactly, but something was said about the Chick-fil-A cow, or cows that they use in their commercials. And so I had to point out to Gary that those were actually Holsteins, and the ironic thing is that they're generally not known for their beef. They do become known for their beef, of course, at one point eventually, but that generally they're dairy cows, and it's bizarre that they feature dairy cows in a commercial that largely talks about how they want to promote the eating of chicken as opposed to beef. And let's just say I was a lot more interested in that conversation than Gary was, so it was pretty brief, and I was thanked, and we moved on to the next person. But the mere idea, Rhonda does this thing on radio in North Carolina called the Ag Minute, and it's just nice to know that at the White House every day, we've at least got an Ag Minute, if not more, when we need it. And so that makes it a good team and a good place to be. I need to avoid listing all of the champions, but I'd be remiss without mentioning the Vice President, who obviously came to elected office in the eighth most significant agricultural state in the country, from Indiana. So he understands our issues. He's got a great staff that also are looking out on ag issues and are engaged. So with that, I've talked about what we want to do as an administration, what our goals are, what some of our priorities are. I've done this before. I also want to touch on a couple of things we hope to not do. I think it's important to tell you some of the things that this administration is not going to do. Number one, this administration has already taken steps to minimize the implications of the last president's WOTUS proposal, and will never propose an expansive reading of the Clean Water Act that gives the federal government an opportunity and jurisdiction to regulate every ditch and mud hole on private property. This administration will not use the Endangered Species Act to regulate in a way that does not respect the peaceful coexistence of productive agriculture and our treasured wildlife. This administration will not release sensitive and private data on farmers just because ecologically driven fanatics and lawyers want it. This administration will not allow the EPA to give taxpayer dollars to activist groups who turn around and then put up billboards that attack farmers. There certainly may be grant payments that are out the door that we can't claw back, but we want to be attentive to not avoiding or repeating that problem. And last but not least, this administration will never lose sight of the fact that the number one farm preservation tool we have is farm profitability, farmers that are making money. Not buzzwords, not catchphrases, not a federal grant program, not ribbon cuttings, but farm profitability. A farmer who makes money this year is very likely to still be a farmer next year. A final statistic on that point. As the son now of an 80-year-old North Carolina farmer and the brother to a farmer as well, I promised myself many years ago that when I was at meetings like this, when I wouldn't stand up and spout out statistics about how important the ag sector is. We've done some of that, but I do want to share one statistic, one number that I think is important, and it informs me in what I do every day in advising the president. And that number or that statistic is three, the number three. That's how many kids that my parents, on their average size farm in southeast North Carolina, raised and put through college with their hard work on the farm. The only source of income my family had was there on the farm. And some of those sons took a long time to get through school, so that's notable. That same sized farm today would not support moving three kids through college. There is a lot going on, admittedly, that has led to that result and to that conclusion, but the takeaway is that we have work to do. I want to be a part of that work. This administration is amenable to doing that work, and we can't do that work if we're all sitting here. So we have to get out there and tell the message. Again, I appreciate you being active and being a part of that. Appreciate you giving me an opportunity to bring you the message today. And my understanding is you may have some questions.
That's Ray Starling, Special Assistant on Agriculture to President Donald Trump. His office is in the White House. He spoke with members of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting just about 2 weeks ago. It'll be 2 weeks ago tomorrow, in fact. I'm bringing you some of what he had to say. Here are some of the questions and some of his answers. The first several questions involve trade, and of course, there was one on Mexico.
Yeah, so let me take the trade question first. I believe that the president's comments about trade, clearly he wants us to win more when it comes to trade. He sees this imbalance. If we look at our net in terms of what we buy from other folks and what we sell to them on the whole, we are at a net loss there. Now, there's plenty of debate about whether that's good for our economy or bad for our economy. But looking at those numbers, that's clearly something the president wants to address. What I think he is understanding is that ag actually helps with that. I think he also certainly understands relationships are important. So I think he understands that. I don't really know how you, now moving to the question, so on trade, that would be my comment on trade. To the extent that there's a conversation about the wall, you know, I think what the president has consistently said is he cares about American safety and American security. So as we have conversations about trade, as we have conversations about agricultural labor, I think we need to make sure that we check those boxes. I think that's achievable. I think when you look at programs like the H-2A program or anything else that we may try to do on the ag labor front, I think we can check that box of making sure that we provide safety and security for Americans. I think that's his interest. I think he said that consistently. And so I think that's achievable. And so those would be my comments about squaring, you know, our relationship with Mexico and our interest both on trade and on immigration.
We're listening to excerpts from a discussion that Ray Starling, Special Assistant on Agriculture to President Donald Trump, had with members of the NEFB. He was asked about land-grant universities and funding them in the future.
I think it's a great question, Rhonda. I think the direct monetary conversation is a hard one. The American people hired a general contractor last November who has now put together a budget blueprint. So I like this idea of a blueprint, a general map, a general plan of the way we want the government spending to go. The people that the Americans, that American citizens elected last year, he had made very clear he wanted the federal government to be smaller and he wanted to prioritize defense and national security in terms of spending objectives. I think that's what you've seen in some of his early budget documents, and I think that will continue. So I think as long as we're focused mainly on watching the money alone, that's going to be a conversation that we have to continue to have with the Hill. Let me move past that, though, and say here's a good example of the way we need to be thinking about that. And it's really a part of the infrastructure conversation is the best parallel or the best example. One of the things we've learned in the process of thinking through this infrastructure package is that it's not just about the public dollars that will be spent. It's about the process that those dollars have to go through before they can be spent. So to the extent that we're building a highway, to the extent that we're dredging, to the extent that we are rebuilding a dam or installing a new dam, how do we shorten the time from start to stop or start to finish with that project to make it less expensive, to make it regulatorily less onerous? How do we do that? And if we can do that, then the dollars that we have will go further. And so the conversation that I'm having with the leaders of our land grant institution is, let's understand that there will always be more needs than there's money to address. I was have worked in state government in a speaker's office. I've worked in the Senate in a senator's office. I have never had a stakeholder come in and say, Senator, we really believe you're giving us too much money. We just can't even think of ways to spend this money. That is just unrealistic and is not going to happen. So the question then for those groups is, let's assume those dollar amounts stay static, or let's assume we reprioritize and at the end of the day you end up with slightly less than you have now. How can we make sure that those dollars that you do have go further? And you've got to tell us that answer. Is there something that the Congress or the administration has required of you, or that state government or your local governments have required of you, that we can get out of your way to ensure that you're able to spend those dollars more efficiently? And I think that's a conversation we want to have, and honestly, it's a conversation we need to have. With, again, the point well made that we need resources, and the way we make gains in this area is funding research, funding support for ag education, for FFA, and for agricultural research. So we get that.
Ray Starling is a special assistant on agriculture to President Donald Trump. His office is in the White House. We spoke with him a couple of weeks ago at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting's Washington Watch event. When we come back, we'll hear more from Mr. Starling. You're listening to the Closing Market Report.
It's St. Isidore the Farmer Day, patron of agricultural workers, livestock, and ranchers. On this day in agricultural history in 1803, Sir Arthur Thomas Cotton was born. A British engineer, his life work was constructing irrigation and dams for water shortages in southern India, saving thousands from famine and promoting the local economy. Cotton also founded the Indian School of Hydraulic Engineering. In 1858, Robert Hare died, an American chemist. He devised the first oxyhydrogen blowpipe, the ancestor of the modern welding torch. Hare's blowpipe could melt sizable quantities of platinum, and largely on the strength of his invention, Hare was awarded honorary degrees from both Yale and Harvard. In 1923, Listerine was registered as a trademark. Before it was a mouthwash, it was a surgical antiseptic, and its name comes from Dr. Joseph Lister, a pioneer of antiseptic surgery. In 1940, nylon stockings went on sale for the first time in the U.S. in Wilmington, Delaware. 4 million pair were sold in several hours. And in 1989, Hershey reduced the size of its chocolate bar to 1.55 ounces. The price remained 40 cents. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com. Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason out of the office for the afternoon. We've been listening to excerpts from a discussion that Ray Starling, Special Assistant on Agriculture to the President, had with members of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting a couple of weeks in Washington, D.C. We're to the question and answer session. He was asked about the mix of cabinet members and how agriculture fit into the puzzle.
Let me take the first part, the relationship with other cabinet individuals. I think this is, again, a place where it is important to have someone at the White House talking about ag. This is why it's important to have the Ag Minute at the White House every day. Certainly Secretary Perdue doesn't need to be counseled on the importance of agriculture. He has already been tremendous in terms of liaisoning with his cabinet counterparts. We expect that to continue. We expect the relationship between he and Ambassador Lighthizer to be very close. He has said, Secretary Perdue himself said during the confirmation process, that he wants to be the number one international cheerleader of American ag products or something to that effect. So I don't think that could be better. I don't honestly see, from the outside looking in at other administrations, I don't really understand how that relationship could be any better than it seems to be developing now. But obviously that's a process. I think at the staff level, again, I don't know how it could be better. I think there's already a tremendous amount of respect for what we do on our issues, the trade issue, for instance. I think when we're talking about the labor issue, there's a recognition in the White House that to the extent that we're having this bigger conversation about immigration and immigration reform, we also need to think about on the micro level what the impact is on ag. You've seen it in regulatory reform. To the extent that there's a broader conversation about regulatory reform, we also have a parallel specific conversation about ag reg reform. And then I'd say the same about infrastructure. To the extent that there are folks at the White House working on that, thinking through that package, identifying what those priorities are, ag has been a part of that conversation. They've engaged both in telephone conferences, they've engaged in person, literally coming in and meeting with some of the leaders of that process. So I'm certainly glad to take feedback on how we could do that better. But I feel like we've got a pretty good start on that, making sure that ag has that toehold at the table, if you will. To go to your question about tax reform, what I would say there is ag, just like in these other conversations, is going to have a seat at the table and has had that seat at the table. We've brought a group of ag tax experts in to meet with my colleague on the National Economic Council, a lady by the name of Shahira Knight, whose sole responsibility is tax and pension reform. We sat her down at a table with experts that know far more about tax policy, particularly as it affects ag, than I do. And they had a chance to educate her about their issues, some of the very same things you just mentioned in your question. So again, just knowing those things are on the table, knowing that's a part of the conversation, I think that's the best we can do for now, and I think we'll keep doing that.
You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Excerpts from a discussion Ray Starling, Special Assistant on Agriculture to President Donald Trump, had with members of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting on the second day of May. You can always hear this program again if you'd like on our website. The address there is willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.